Hello, a bit of a different voice this week, you'll have noticed. I'm Sam, or sometimes Sammy. You may recognize my voice from a couple of guest episodes earlier in this show's run, and hopefully some more in the future. I'm just popping by on the Potter feed here to share a preview of the show's new collab with Gamer Era. Gamer Era is a video games podcast I launched with David earlier this year on Friendly Mush. We're 18 episodes strong now, and this is our longest episode to date by quite a wide margin, but we've still got plenty more on the tank, don't worry. This episode is mostly a discussion of various Doctor Who games of the era, but we wrap it in this sort of rolling timeline that spans from the neon-soaked relaunch in 1980 all the way to where Potter is now at the end of 2010. So if you've ever wanted to hear Potter talk more about the classic era, this is a really good spot to get a taste for that, but it's also just a really good space for classic games enthusiasts in general. We actually meant to cover all the way to the present day in this ep, but we went so far over our time that we decided to split off into a part two down the line. So do enjoy a thorough coverage in this ep, but also look forward to the second part somewhere down the line as well. In this opening segment, we also talk a bit about Michelle's involvement in writing for Fallout London, so if you've been curious about that, I would definitely recommend a listen. We debated which specific part to clip from the episode for you guys, and decided it would just be best to put this whole opening segment in as is. So if you finish up with this and like what you're hearing, feel free to hop over to the main Gamer Era feed from around the 25-26 minute mark. You won't miss anything or hear anything repeated, it'll just be straight into the Who timeline from there. You can find us with all the other wonderful shows at friendlymush.com or by simply typing Gamer Era Podcast into Google or your podcatcher of choice. With all that said, thank you very much for listening, and thank you once again to David and Michelle for this opportunity. Allons-y!
Into fucking Lego.
Hello, and welcome to a very special Gamer Era, a melting of the minds, a crossing over of worlds, a calamity on multiple scales, some are saying. It's the collision between Gamer Era and Potter Who Cast, in a sense. Joining me, I have David from Potter Who Cast. It's great to have you on the show, David. I know you haven't done many podcasts outside of Potter, but...
Yeah, I don't really listen. So
no, it's fine. I mean, you know, we'll loop you in. You'll get the gist of the show as we go on, I'm sure. But also joining you, we have Michelle from Potter Who Cast.
Hello.
Say hello, Michelle. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm excited to talk about like what 90% bad games, 10% okay games.
Oh yeah, it's like an orange. You gotta real squeeze it tight. All the pulp comes out. Mm-hmm. It's bitter and it's hard and it's horrible. Some of it gets in your eye. And then there's that sweet, sweet nectar somewhere in there, but you've really got to rifle
through. And you keep going like, there's got to be an easier way for me to get this pulp.
You mean there's a better way?
Oh, yeah. It's Whisper Quiet!
So I suppose we should kick off as we always do, talking about our gaming eras. David, for you and I imagine, for me, it's certainly just been a lot of playing a lot of these games, and my eyes slightly glazing over, but...
Yeah, but there's also another thing that I have to address.
Okay.
So, this past week, a humble bundle, was announced of, I think, like, 30 LEGO games.
Yes.
And look, I don't want to say that I don't like having a niche.
Uh-huh.
But everyone seemed to turn to me like I was a dancing kind of jester and say, well, look at this.
Yeah.
Look at this, little Lego boy. Do you want to put some blocks together?
Yeah.
Do you want to help out? And I will say there's more to me than Lego games. There's more to me than Traveler's Tales. There's more to me than licensed products. Having said that, I spent the week playing Lego Star Wars 2.
Okay.
It's the PSP port.
That is a much
port.
Better choice.
It's the PSP port they put on PS Plus to be like, you know, because I don't know if you two know like the weird thing with, because obviously they've only cracked PS2 emulation recently. So like their workaround was, if there's a PSP port, you're going to get the PSP port.
Yeah.
And that game is not very well optimized.
Wait, hold on. I've played a PS1 game on my PS4.
The PS1, they cracked. PS2, they were like, we have no idea how this to work.
The PS2 stuff, they were running through, they were running the PS4 emulator, which was already kind of buggy. That was running in back compat mode on PS5. But that in itself was having like extra issues on top of it. It just seemed so dodgy to me that they were putting those PS2 games on there. Like they had like the Jack trilogy and stuff like that. Or it might have just been Jack 1, I don't know.
No, it was a trilogy.
It was a trilogy.
It's a PS4.
Yeah.
Remastered. It's a PS4, like, you know,
port. Yeah, I think some of them have trophies, some of them, but they're very buggy. The point where they have like a little error message that pops up that's like, you may experience stability issues. It's like, I feel like that's the best optics to be giving those games away for free, Sony.
The thing then is that they do like PS3. If there's like, you know, the slight before this Sly Cooper, because there's only like one Sly Cooper game available right now.
Yeah,
right, like the original PS2. But before this, they were doing like, you know, you got like a HD remaster in PS3. But because they can't crack PS3 emulation on the PS5 either, they're all like, you can only stream them. So
yeah,
you know, if you want to, like, before this, if you want to be like, you know, Sly Cooper or what the fuck it's called over here, Sly Raccoon, you had to be blessed with a good enough connection to stream like a HD game to your console. And even then, because I tried it with like God of War, the amount of buffering that would happen,
it gets real blocky. Annoying. It gets real blocky. Game streaming has never really fully been there for me. I think the best application it had was when Microsoft put it into Game Pass, and it was like, you can sample a game before you download it, but I've never wanted to play anything for more than like 10 minutes that way. It's like, okay, no, I will download it. It's like, I mean, we obviously all remember what happened with Stadia, where they were like, aren't you just so tired of long download speeds? But then the whole issue is that, like, you need to have a fast internet connection for streaming to work anyway. So it just, there was no use case for it. As I say, and I as I'm sure you're agreeing, Michelle, like, it does just work better as a demo rather than something you're going to play a whole ass game through.
That's how I played, what's it called? I don't know if it's the latest Need for Speed, but it's a Need for Speed that has these, I do not know what the subtitle of the game is, but I do know that they have this really cool effect when you're going really fast and you drift or you brake. They have these hand-drawn, it's clearly not actually hand-drawn, but it's like cel-shaded smoke. And I was like, that's really cool. I should download the game. And then I downloaded it, and I never played it. And my Game Pass in 4 days. So.
The curse. That game was on Game Pass through EA Play. That was Need for Speed Unbound. That's the most recent one. Need for Speed has an interesting history. I'll get into it at some point, because the modern Need for Speed games are just bizarre in how that series, like, fell off the radar for most people, but they just kept quietly releasing them. Unbound was one where they literally announced it maybe, like, it got leaked early, but then they actually released it maybe 2 months after the announcement. They did this really weird, like, sort of Black Ops, like, marketing campaign where they actually updated all the icons for the old Need for Speed games to have, like, this neon green effect. I just booted up my Xbox one day. I was like, oh, the logos all look, like, weird. Like, what happened? And then they announced the new game, like, a day or two later. I was like, oh, that was interesting. That was a...
And this was in this decade?
Yeah, this was in 2022. Yeah, in the 2022. Jesus. Yeah, that was a really interesting game, because that was one where I was like playing it, and they have those cel-shaded effects on the vehicles, and then also all the character models are cel-shaded. All the cars and the city and stuff is all still like fairly realistic.
Right.
But I remember it was really striking at the time. I was like, oh, whoa, this is the first time I've seen like cel-shading in a big sort of AAA game for a while. And then Hi-Fi Rush did it again like 2 or 3 months later. I was like, oh, cool, hey, we're back. But it was a bit of a fluke. I mean, cel shading does look so nice these days, though. It went through such a funky period in like the mid-PS2
Everyone was doing it from like 2000 and 2006 to 2010.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like everybody was doing it.
Yeah. Like, Jet Set Radio kicks it off, and then, like, Wind Waker is obviously a big example of it, and then mm-hmm. it goes through to stuff like Cell Damage and 13.
Beautiful Joe.
Beautiful Joe, yeah. And some of those games, it looks really nice. Some of them, it looks kind of dodgy. You can tell it's just sort of, like, the models are quite low poly underneath it.
Right.
But yeah, that was a long and short way of saying, yes, games are good.
And also, all these games we're talking about, where we have to, like, emulate the games, we're paying to emulate the games. I keep thinking about, me and a friend wanted to play Army of Two. My friend was like, I want to show you Army of Two from the Xbox 360, because it was one of her favorite games.
Mm.
It took us so long to be able to play local multiplayer, because it required an Xbox Live account.
Yes!
And we couldn't make one. And so, I don't know. We fixed it. We figured it out.
Yeah.
But, like, we had, like, a local profile. We had to make a profile. It was so complicated. The whole time I'm thinking, like, they don't think you're going to play these games. They just assume you're going to go, like, wow, Army of Two. And I'm not going to play this now, but it's good to know that I have Army of Two in Game Pass.
Yeah. That was the weirdest thing about the 360 era, when you did just need to sign into an account to play a local game. I think the idea was that your achievements would sync or whatever, but it's also just like, if you just got, like, a friend around who doesn't even have an Xbox, like, why does that matter? Just, like, let them be a guest or whatever. It was...
Yeah, like for local multiplayer, for split screen, like, what are we getting from it? But also, it's like, I remember when somebody told me the Xbox was, you had to pay to play online. And I was like, what? Because I am from a computer, and to dovetail into the theme of this week's show, I noticed something very interesting, which is just how different early computers were for you folks in the UK and the Isles. I don't know what the word for the Isles.
No, I always trip over this when I'm talking about stuff with David, because obviously David's from Ireland. So if I say the UK, that's a very loaded term. I don't know if the British Isles includes you, or if that's another... If it was like...
We are not going to claim that title anymore, I have a feeling.
That's very fair.
Guilty by association at this point. So,
yeah. You know. The pals. The friends.
The other ones. Region 2.
Sure.
Yeah.
The reason why I can't have a Blu-ray of Ishtar or a DVD of The Goes Wrong Show. Because they only play in Region 2.
Ah, yes. But yeah, like, I am really excited at some point to get more into UK computer history. There's a very specific segment I have lined up, which I'm quite excited to present. I've been doing, outside of, like, part of why I haven't been playing as many games this week outside of the Who stuff is I've just been reading. I find it really fun just how many books are coming out these days about games history and stuff and tech history.
Do you know about Bitmap Books?
Bitmap Books.
Yes, I'm anxiously waiting for them to restock their computer RPG book. They put out this massive, huge, chunky book that's like every CRPG book, a game. So that's computer RPG.
Yeah.
And I look at it and I'm like, I need to have this book in my hands.
I mean, it's about RPGs. It's got to be a really tome, good. Right? It's like, that's a coffee book table. A coffee table book that over, is the coffee table.
Yeah, it's 684 pages.
Wow.
It has interviews with Tim Kaine, Ian Frazier, Richard Corbett. I mean, it's a really good one. Another one I also recommend, and I say this in general, because I backed this in Kickstarter. I don't remember who wrote this, but it's 50 years of interactive fiction or interactive games. I don't know what the exact name is, but basically it's like the history of interactive text. Over the 50, and he chronicles every game, the guy who wrote it, and he like explains how each game was made. Very, very fun book, especially because interactive fiction seems to be the only realm in which Doctor Who has managed to work over the past few years, with one exception, which I will mention also later. But talking about early British computing, one of the reasons why I've been thinking about that is because you wanted to talk about this, so I'll bring it up, and then I don't know if you want to talk about this now, but in Fallout, there was like a very interesting effort to change every computer to look like an old British computer. I do not know what the exact name is, but I've seen so many people, like, when they see the terminal and they're like, oh, it looks like the, and I forgot the name of the thing. I want to say Amiga, but I know it's not the Amiga, but
no, it's like, it will definitely, I think it will come up in our list of stuff we're discussing. That's super cool. I didn't even think about that, because obviously the, one of the big things, and we will definitely get onto Fallout London. I'm glad you provided me a bit of a segue there, because I was, in my head, I was like, the abacus was being toggled about. I was trying to figure out how to get onto it. Obviously the whole thing in Fallout as the core series is it's like based in sort of, I haven't played it firsthand, so bear with me if I get anything wrong, but it's sort of very based in Americana of like the 40s and 50s. And like the Pip-Boy is like very based around like early computers, early terminals, that kind of thing. So to do that pivot where it's from this British point of view and it's going from microcomputers, I didn't even think about that. That's got me actually more excited to try that game. But yeah, speaking of Fallout London,
there's others. Oh, go ahead. You first. No.
It's
sorry.
No. Please go on. I was providing.
No. I was gonna. I think we were gonna say the same thing, and I was about to say it, but you were about to say it too.
Go for it.
Well, you should say it, because I feel like if I say, hey, I worked on this game, it feels
I'd be like, what?
Let's talk about my credits. Yeah.
No worries.
To break it down, I am one of the writers for Fallout London. I've been working on the mod since like 2021. And to speak a little bit about that adaptation into the British thing, it's one of the things I'm most, I have nothing to do with it. I mean, I do it in parts, but it was mostly the art team and actually, like, thinking these things through. The Pip-Boy is replaced with, like, a cassette player. There's in-lore reasons as to why all these machines exist. When you find our version of the Pip-Boy, which is called the Attaboy, you find it right next to a Pip-Boy, and there's a terminal where it's like they were clearly trying to reverse engineer this machinery into something that they could use.
Yeah.
And instead they have the Attaboy, which is, again, it's a cassette player. So all the holotapes are like cassettes. You slide into the back and you press a button. It's a really satisfying animation. But that's, it's so just cool. One of the many things that, like, the game was very, the idea was like, we're going to make the British version of Fallout. What is the British version of 40s, 50s, 60s Americana?
Yep.
And I think the decision was sort of made to, like, coexist within different eras of British science fiction. There's a lot of Doctor Who. There's a lot of, like, Brave New World. There's a quest I wrote, which the brief was pretty much like, this needs to be, like, one of those, we like Brave New World, where it's just a bunch of people being like, yeah, that's how fucked up our society is, when you all think it's okay. Like, there's a lot of little inspirations that we pulled from, and the biggest one is basically Doctor Who. There's so many fucking references to Doctor Who in the game.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody was putting some. I can speak to my own. I put Chap with the Wings, Five Rounds Rapid. It was not wings, it was something. There's a faction of mutant creatures who are sea monsters. Mm-hmm. And there's a line where they say, they call us sea devils and warriors of the deeps, but we just want to be left alone. There's a character who says, one day I'll come back. Yes, I'll come back. And I'm pretty sure I use, like, and somewhere the tea is getting cold. But there are so many others. You can find TARDISes around the map. There's 15 you have to find, and you get a really cool gift at the end. I don't want to spoil what it is.
Wow.
But it's filled with basically what we assume to be, which is funny because I'm a Brazilian living in America. So it's like, what is my version of British? And it was kind of weird because I like to say that there's a smaller gap between Brazilian comedy and British comedy than Brazilian comedy and American comedy, specifically when in you guys' sitcoms. So I got a chance to write a character that was supposed to be like the comic relief companion. And we were like, okay, who are the inspirations? And the inspirations were both like Graham Chapman. Just every single time that he played one of those characters where he says like completely insane things with the most straight face of possible. And also this Brazilian actor I love called Miguel Falabella, who is basically like the living embodiment of sarcasm. And it allowed us to find like, oh, it's like you can find the Britishness even though you're not British. And we didn't want to make it too British, so it didn't turn into the joke version of like everyone is saying hey, bruv,
yeah,
boy, mate, that kind of stuff. But basically, yeah, like that's kind of like how we did that.
That's so cool. Because Fallout London was like, it was one of those projects I'd heard about for years, but it always, like, you know, it would surface a little bit when some major progress was made, or, you know, when the new trailer came out or something, and then it would go back below the deep for a couple years. And then just hearing out of nowhere, first that you'd worked on it, which came out of nowhere for me, and then second, there was just this massive wave of press releases, and then I saw it was on GOG. I think Fallout 4, like the Game of the Year edition, went on sale at the same time as well, so it was like, I think you can get it for like £12 or something now, so you can just get that, load the mod up.
Which I do recommend. If you're looking to play for it, I do recommend getting the GOG version, although you can downgrade. And I do have to say, you know, because it is a mod and we are working with the Fallout 4 engine, which is from 2013.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's 10 years old.
Wow.
Because we're working with this engine, you will likely meet some crashes, but we are very much working on like fixing as many crashes as possible and also making it as easy as possible for you to get that support through our Discord. Yeah. Sorry to just slip into that. But basically, you might crash. Likely will crash, but we can work with you to make that the most painless experience possible.
Absolutely. Very much unlike walking through a field of Doctor Who games, painful.
Before we get into it, I wanted to bring up another game I've been playing.
Sorry. Oh, sure. Yeah, please.
Because I feel like we were talking about games we're playing recently. I'm playing a lot of Poker Night at the Inventory, is a game you probably have not thought about for also 10 years.
I thought about it 2 months ago when I installed it on my deck again,
really?
Actually. Yeah, because
I also installed it in my deck.
I think I got it for like £1 like a decade ago, and then purely because of the strong bad stuff. And I was like, you know, the other stuff's cute. Maybe not Tycho from Penny Arcade. Don't know who invited bro. Like, he's not even in a, like, everyone else is from a Telltale game, but he's just like, I don't know, just hanging.
It's really fun. I got into the game because my friends taught me poker, and now that I actually understand poker, I actually do like the game, so I'm enjoying it much more. But that game is very funny solely because I think every game, they make you a promise, and whenever you're playing, there's always a moment where you find the end of the magic trick, where you're like, this is as much as this game can simulate. And you can find the barrier for Poker Night very quickly. They will repeat very much of the same lines. I have heard Max from Sam and Max say, checking it's the cool thing to do 25 times, and I've only been playing it for a day and a half.
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of those games where like they repeat the lines a lot, and to have to listen to webcomic guy.
Oh.
He's not from the webcomic that did Lost, right?
No, he's the one that the Lost guy ripped off, basically.
Right,
see the very long H from
guy
that
video. Comic. Yeah. He is that comic where it's him yelling at Jack Thompson, right?
Yeah, he's telling the one that's like, I will kick your door down and I will kill your dog or whatever.
Don't underestimate
Yeah, that's
gamers.
It. Don't ever fucking underestimate us. It's like, cool.
It's
We are not violent.
His character sucks balls. It is basically
so bad.
Like, he just makes references.
Yeah.
Literally, he won an all-in showdown against, like, Strong Bad, and he was like, this is just like rolling a 20, and then and I was like, shut the fuck up! Like, shut up! I don't care. I do not care.
I know.
You are awful!
He was trite for, like, 2010. I was watching trailers of that as a 13-year-old, and there was a bit where he was like, oh, Strong Bad, you remind me of Pokemon or something, and I was just like, shut up! Go away!
Yes. There's a bit where he's like, he turns to the heavy and he's like, wow, Team Fortress 2, you guys have been 3 years on Steam. That's got to be pretty good. And I was like, shut up.
Yeah.
The heavy's like, what are you talking about?
It's very funny that you can unlock cosmetics in that 14 Fortress 2, which is a game that's still kind of hanging in there. I know they had their issue with the bots and stuff, but it's like, still an action
game. It just got
game.
Revived. It just got revived because they fixed the bot. I do not understand Valve software. I'm sorry for everyone who was like, get to the Doctor Who stuff. I don't know who you are, but I'm sorry. But I do not understand Valve software. People can be complaining about these bots for so long.
Yeah.
And then they were like, July 2024, that's when we're going to fix it. And then they actually did. You can go play that game now and there's no more robots. And I'm like... Why did it take you so long?
They had to make the button that they could just press, apparently. That was funny.
It's a very interesting game, very much a good way for you to play poker if you want to play poker. Also impossible to own. I try to find Poker Night 2 because Poker Night 2 has Brock from Venture Brothers.
Yep.
And
and Claptrap from Borderlands.
I was trying to avoid remembering that. But it is like $86 if you want to get a Steam key for Poker Night 2.
Yeah, like, from some guy that's like hoarded one for the last 5 years or whatever.
It's like, I knew this was going to pay off. By the way, did you see the Claptrap from the Borderlands movie?
Yeah.
God.
No, thank you. Yeah. No, thank you.
I thought it's really interesting how in the video he was like, from the blockbuster hit movie Borderlands. I'm like, I would wait a little bit before saying that, guys. Although we've never know. Who knows?
Who knows?
You know, I really think this movie might be a success. It's Claptrap. Like, I could be the great blockbuster. You know, I really think you might.